Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. Speaker's Corner says, what a fucking bounce. I don't know what that means. I'm back from vacation. 3 days of vacation. 3 days. And the entire female race, ladies and gentlemen, vindicated. Because I've spent these 3 days with my girlfriend. Let me tell you, I was about to become bigoted. I was about to become bigoted against women. I was about to hate all women. But my girlfriend and I have spent 3 days together. What a wonderful woman. And it's so painful to see a person knowing how to love just out of nowhere. I had to look across the planet to find a woman who just doesn't have severe mental disorders, who won't see a ghost coming out of the walls, and who will just be positively responding in general, capable of cooking, appreciating my cooking. It is so relieving to see that the woman genre is not totally dead. They made one, and they made one for me. I had to find a woman of radical autism that would have such autism that she she could resist to the propaganda of the ongoing feminist world and the whole be pissed at your husband type of stuff. But I've really enjoyed all the time I've spent with her. And you need basically to have such a radical brain to survive in modernity while not losing your mind and not being misguided toward devilish influences. I am stunned and on the floor. John Selmer Dick says, I am not bigoted enough for a system. Friedrich Nietzsche. Oh yeah, I have some quotes like this that came out about black-pilled thinkers. I will be reviewing them later. Here on Dave Asprey's TikTok channel, the theory of why are modern males gaming? You know, you have these mothers, and I understand their despair. You see your adult child, your adult son, he spends his days gaming. He's not looking for a girlfriend. I found this extremely interesting, sent to me by Stephen Robinson, an explanation for why we have the male deadbeat, not even looking for a girlfriend.
What do you think happens to men when there are no women who are fertile and ovulating in the world around them? I'll tell you what happens. Our bodies, without our conscious knowledge, our bodies are like, it's the end of the world. There are no fertile women. And I don't mean like we're thinking about any of this, just like we get pheromones. Like the species can be alive. And when everyone's on the pill, which is very harmful for your hormones, right? But it suppresses ovulation.
And pheromones as well.
Yeah. Testosterone's depressed. So now our testosterone levels go down. And also we're happy to play video games in grandma's basement because there's no reason to live. Literally, if you want men to show up for women, we need to sense that there are women around to show up for. And it's not a conscious thing. And I'm not blaming women at all, but it's a cycle. Men and women need each other to be healthy hormonally. So you also, as a woman, need to be like, oh, there's guys around here with pheromones. Even if they're guys you're uninterested in, it's not about the sexual attraction. It's about the subtle environmental signal that says, like, there's a society and our species is moving forward. It's a low-level signal.
I like the TikTok will always play you the next video as if I'm interested. I like the hypothesis. Perhaps, you know, it's not worth it to engage with the real world. There are not enough fertile females out there. Everyone is on the birth pill. You know, I want a world in which my dick could accidentally make a baby, and we don't have that world. We have the world where we have to submit ourselves through the female eugenic selection process at this point, which includes the capacity to kill the child after it's been conceived. Maybe the world is just not worth it. And maybe these guys who end up just gaming and withdrawing from society, maybe they are perceiving something correct, which is that they're already dead, that it's already done for their genes. And It's not worth it. So enjoy just existence. Try to finish your life with some sort of pleasure and some sort of pursuit. But it's not worth it because there's too much female control on what will happen with the baby. Steinberg says, my associate, who is a minimum loser, his mom tells me she is just glad he is not a drug addict or a gang member. He has no purpose and is happy playing League of Legends. But how do you explain all the incels who are doing these things? Well, if you are a dead end of evolution, you know, you better know it. You better, your body might know it in some way. And perhaps the under-fertile female environment of 2024 is simply a signal that says to a couple of genes, you know, don't even bother. Don't even bother. James says, I struggle to find a worse human invention than the birth pill. Oh, yeah, it's actually interesting. And it's interesting how it's put forward as a great progress of society. And yet, when you think about everything that it brings in, holy shit, does it. The fact that there's the birth pill means you don't have to care for having careless sex. Now, because you don't care about careless sex, you have a whole set of effects on females pursuing bizarre styles of males that they wouldn't even want to reproduce with. They're now doing sexual tourism. Now, you've turned your civilization into sexual tourism game rather than a game of actual quality selection. So if you've undermined the natural eugenic pressure that led, hey, you know, having sex is a big decision. You better choose a guy that seems like he can handle a couple of future detours because it's going to be rough and you need a guy of quality. They don't select for this anymore. They select for the spectacle of sex tourism. John Selmer Dick says, manifesting a dynamic rather than perceiving it. Okay. I don't know what that refers to. I'm extremely worried about this attack on property. And don't worry, we'll get to our main subject, which is amazing, which is Candace Owen is setting a gigantic trap for the bloodthirsty Zionist. And it's beautiful to see it. But I'm extremely worried about this. Liz Warren and socialist pals want to normalize confiscation of assets with ultra-rich tax. On Tuesday, we introduced our Ultra-Millionaire Tax Act, by which the government would confiscate 2% from households worth between $50 million and $1 billion and 3% on households worth over $1 billion. In other words, make enough money and it's not your money anymore. This is nothing else than communism. It is confiscation of property, and property doesn't exist if there's an amount of it that you can't have. That's not property. You are renting your bank account if it's the case that after a certain number, you lose it. Stephen Robinson says, who watched Ron Paul Sr. interview with Tucker? I haven't gotten to it because the Candace stuff was so exciting, but I'll get to it. Charles Garrity says, I'm quite impressed with Owens. I always saw her as a normie conservative, but give her credit. Yeah, she is going above and beyond what a normie conservative would have to do. And what I understand from what Candace Owen is doing is she is going after the whole fallacious process of Jewish treatment on the public space of their ideological opponents. And she says, no more. No more can you extort us. No more can you threaten us. And I've been targeted by the very same powers that Candace Owen is describing. And I would love it at some point if Candace Owen looks into my history. Because I got the Daily Beast. Because she's out there, you know, trapping them into a case where she can truly demonstrate that she's not a racist anti-Semite, and that yet she gets called this, and that they lie, and that they use fallacies to get there. I've been called much worse than an anti-Semite by these people. In 2018-19, they started a campaign to make the internet believe that I was a rapist when I wasn't. And just this year and last year, they are engaged in a campaign that led millions of people to believe that I'm a murderer. And so, Candace, I don't want to minimize your suffering, Candace. I know they targeted you, and they targeted you hard. But look into my story. I mean, they went hard. They went hard at making people believe such that every morning I wake up and I have at least a tweet of someone who still believes I'm a murderer. And this has been done by Jewish interest, starting with a Jewish journalist at the Kelly Whale at the Daily Beast, which is a Jewish outlet. And then it got to other Jewish writers at other Jewish outlets like Newsweek. There has been mainstream smearing of me from the moment I started analyzing the question of Jewish influence in America and being somewhat critical of it. Not to the point that I don't want Jews to be able to speak, but to the point where I want us to realize that there is major blind spots in how a bunch of intellectual Jews will treat a question and will inform the public about it. And I saw the build-up of this blind spot, and I wasn't sure then that it was destined to act in the way it does in the Israel and Gaza situation. But when you realize why this blind spot has been cultivated in Western society, it is for a couple of reasons. One is the control of demographics of Western civilization. One is this anti-white hatred, this whole system, and anti-black hatred of this group is not the same as the anti-white one. It is an anti-blackness of condescension to a certain extent, and it passes through what Kanye properly identified, for example, the impact of abortion clinics on the black population in the U.S. The black population of the U.S. is stable. This is amazing. This is amazing in 2024, in a world that is so advantageous to black people, where minorities are given opportunities that white people aren't given. It is amazing that the black population is stable. And why is it stable? It's because they are targeted by the very same genocidal processes that are targeting white people. They're targeted by the birth pill, abortion clinics, professional, and this whole selling that the system has done to black people is the wrong one. It's to tell them that, you can be successful. You can be Don Lemon. You can be, you're a minority, we can give you a little bump so that you get a CNN host position despite your lack of talent. Or you can be an actor because now we just hire exclusively black people in this movie, and we hire 90% black people in this movie. Which actually is as much genocidal as the birth pill and as the abortion clinic. It's taking a population and pushing them toward the wrong branches of realization. Just like females are being pushed toward the wrong branches of realization when they are dangled toward the university. Yes, DK Shadow, I love that word, dangle. Dangle that carrot. The problem is, as long as you dangle that carrot, what's the natural state? What's the natural outcome that should have happened to black people in America? And I'm talking about all this because ultimately it's why Candace Owen has a case. She has a case against the Jewish elite. She has a case against the people who are attacking her right now. And so that's why I want to talk about this. It's not that I'm suddenly a black nationalist, okay? But the regular outcome of the black population demographically in the U.S. should be that they have, by now, overtaken the whole of the U.S. breeding like rabbits. You know, they have all of the features. They have all of the genetic features that you would expect a high breeding population could have. So, for example, their closest genetic cousins in Africa have a birth rate of 6 to 7 babies per woman. They have lower IQ, which is associated with higher capacity to make children. The natural state of the black population right now is pushed down by certain forms of propaganda and genocidal practices that didn't lead them to reach the level of success they should have and could have reached. And I believe that the Kanye West and the Candace Owens of this world, when they look at the situation, they see there's something wrong there. And the something wrong it is everything that was thrown at the black population. And to a certain extent, I would argue it was tested on the black population before it was run on the white population. Family courts, systemic perception of the male as abuse, the birth pill, all of these options to get rid of children. All of this came from technological progression, mediatic propaganda, and political controls, all of which under high Zionist influence. And so when you consider everything I've said for the last 15 minutes, and you have a Tim Pool, and so, oh, bro, what? Why are you so obsessed with Jews, bro? Like, Myanmar. What about the war in Myanmar? There are babies burning in Myanmar. Do you know how many babies are burning in Myanmar? Why do you talk about Gaza? It's so weak of him. Let's listen to what he... This is so ridiculous. You have to give credits to Richard Spencer for telling me in 2018... Tim Pool is a fucking retard, basically. And I was like, are you sure? I mean, I kind of like the Tim cast. I like the hat. But under the hat, something is hiding. Another hat.
Well, NATO, we just use NATO as, I mean, it's not, we're pulling the strings of NATO. My point is, I would argue Israel is pulling a lot of our strings in terms of foreign policy.
No, I think you're wrong. I think we're pulling the strings of Israel. That's the real, that's.
If we were pulling the streets of Israel, if we were pulling the strings of Israel, we would have a class of American billionaire, white Christian, like carrying the cross in Israel, like the cross tattooed on the heart, and they'd be white American Christians, and they'd be playing in the back scene of Israeli politics. They'd be controlling all of the Israeli outlets. It's so ridiculous. How can you not see the asymmetry between a system that is penetrated by the agents of the other and a system that is completely left alone? The Israeli politicians are Israeli. The Israeli newspapers are Israeli. The Israeli media is Israeli. But can you say the same about American media, American politics? No, you can't. So Tim Pool, in absolute bad faith, is refusing to see the obvious asymmetry, which is that pulling the strings. We don't even have strings in Israel. We don't.
It's really what's going on, because Israel is an intelligence and military asset for us in the Middle East.
Yes, and DK Shadow says it's not the Jews wailing at the Christian wall. It's not every Israeli politician, in order to get his position of power, needs to go kneel in front of George Washington or what, kiss the feet of the George Washington statue. No, that doesn't happen. It's our politicians that need to go kiss the Jewish wall to be elected here.
Least. So when we are staging,
but how is it an asset if they've gotten us into all the major
conflicts? No, those are our wars. Those are our wars.
Okay.
NATO's not getting us involved in things. We're getting NATO involved in things, and Israel's not. You see my point?
I agree on NATO. I don't agree on Israel.
To take the comparison with NATO is absolutely dishonest. NATO itself is subject to high Israeli influence, high Jewish proportions. They have historically joined tasks and strikes that have been totally in line with Israeli interests. So to even make a comparison here without realizing that you're talking about the very same phenomenon. NATO interests are penetrated by Jewish interests in the very same way the American military is.
There are some Americans.
Your position makes no sense.
Okay, there are some, but I mean, like the founding neocons who the PNAC group, those guys were Americans, but they basically did all that for Israel. So I think
Australia is roping us into this war with China. Okay, why are we sending in ships, Tim, and personnel to Australia?
Tim. Well, tell us, Tim Pool, what are the fallacies committed by Australian media that are propagated across the mediatic waves in the US? What is the genocide of Australians that I can't deny by law in Europe and soon Canada? What is the... Is there such a term as anti-Australianism? Anti-Australianism, which is denying the right of the Australians to exist. None of these things exist. Anti-Semitism exists. Anti-laws that are against the denial of the Holocaust exist. Control of the media exists. It's so ridiculous. I can't believe that this is a mainstream show happening in front of tens of thousands of people, and Tim Pool is just spewing this crap. I took 3 days off the internet and this little sneaky fucker goes behind my back and tells these lies to hundreds of thousands of people.
In 2002, Tim.
Did they even send us any kangaroos? What is this?
You guys know what's going on with Australia and China, right?
Yeah, they're having big issues. And that's why we sold Australia a whole bunch of weapons.
Yep.
By the way, if you want the current true representation of the state between China and Australia, it's that I don't even know that Australian interest will exist in 100 years from now, because there is a wave of immigration from China and from the Asian nations to Australia. And I wouldn't be surprised that we have an Asian Australia coming. Not one where the English proportion of the population there even has any meaning to the political development going forward.
And there's food issues and dairy issues. It's been wild. It's been going on. So when I went 10 years ago to New Zealand, I started learning about the conflict between Australia and China. New Zealand is partially involved in, and the things China's been doing in this region of the world is massive. I mean, they're building these naval bases and air force bases on the atolls. They're manufacturing islands to establish power. They're sinking Vietnamese vessels.
Okay, that could all be true. China may have aggressive intentions toward Australia, but there is no subversion of the American public by Australian interests. Which is why no one comments on the damn Australians. The damn Australians that are annoying us with this propaganda that doesn't exist.
I mean, the threat here is tremendous, and Taiwan is roping us into it. I think the real...
Okay. But we have the choice to say no, and we are not misinformed about it.
The real issue is Taiwan-China. Why are we involved in this? Do you know what's going on with China and Taiwan and how much money we spend and how many personnel we have in Taiwan?
Meanwhile, I think the Taiwan...
Okay, well, let's remove this personnel. Now, I've never heard a single argument that we should have this personnel there. And so vote for Donald Trump and make them pay or whatever.
The Taiwanese are lobbying revolution. Us so that they can get us involved in their regional conflict.
Tim, I agree. And there is some of that. But the reality, like, you must know this. I mean, the reality in terms of dollar value, the reality in terms of espionage leverage, like Jeffrey Epstein,
So this guy ended up, trying to make a case to Tim Pool. You're ridiculous. There's an asymmetry. We're not talking about extortion. We're not, like, if I write a blog post tomorrow morning arguing that America has nothing to do in Taiwan, there's not going to be an article in the mainstream media tomorrow, the next day, claiming that I'm a murderer. And yet there is when I talk about Israel. Why? Why is it that what I can say about Taiwan, I can't say about Israel. And that is the great question of Candace Owen. That is the quest on which she is. And it's beautiful what she's been doing. I commented, Candace goes solidly against the established practice of certain Zionist media to be smearing anyone who doesn't fully subscribe to their bloodthirsty plans for humanity. The same bounty hunters that have been going after her for years have been going after me too. In 2018, they tried smearing me as a rapist. Then in 2023, as a murderer. Always, they were wrong. Most importantly, this system of ideological extortion has been so obvious in its evil that people like Candace have now no problem standing on a moral high ground with advertisers and a mainstream outlet and undermining their schemes. This has to stop. Ultimately, what these radical Zionists are demanding is that Western civilization pays the price of liberalism in letting them express themselves freely while denying for ourselves the liberty of thought that is supposed to come with an open society. Bombing babies is bad, you greedy, bloodthirsty idiots. You won't intimidate us into thinking the contrary. Most of my career has been a play on what Candace Owen is doing right now. Here's the play. I published a scientific theory. I know it's correct because I'm a PhD. I understand this field, and I don't want to cite my PhD as a form of authority, but I know what I'm talking about. I know that this theory is absolutely correct in biology, is deepening our understanding of biology. And yet I had questions about, is this whole system that I see with Jews preferring to hire Jews preferring to invite Jews on intellectual podcasts, Jews talking about Jews to other Jews. I was like, can it even learn something from the outside? And so I launched myself on a quest, which is first to publish a scientific theory and then test, will this scientific theory be fully ignored by the academia, the media, or will they take it in? Because I know that a true scientific theory, 100 years down the line, this is accepted. This will be in textbook. I know this. What I was wondering is there even openness of political enemy? And so I started covering the question of Jewish interest in America, knowing very well that it would trigger the responses that it triggered. And this is exactly what Candace is doing this week. She's trapping. Now, if you want to trap, you need a bait. And Candace has her blackness as a good bait. I have my scientific theory, and we're sitting in front of the bait, and they're coming at it like fucking carnivorous dinosaurs, like T-Rex, and I'm like, holy shit, it's as bad as you would think. It's as fucking bad as you would think. Candace Owen made this amazing interview. I highly recommend people go watch this. Okay. This is an intellectual clinic in how you set a trap and you let the guy fall in it. People have been saying, I'm not satisfied by the rabbi won rhetorically. No, not at all. This is Candace Owen setting the most beautiful trap for a radical Zionist I've ever seen. Okay? She sits there. And she takes note and she's like, oh, yeah, keep telling us about this. And she has a point. The most important point of this interview is, what's the definition of anti-Semitism? Because she took this guy who wrote a whole article about her and where he's saying she's an anti-Semite, just like Rabbi Schmuckle, okay? And who Candace Owen called Rabbi Schmuckle a unholy rabbi with a rag daughter because his daughter happens to be a promoter. This is unbelievable. It's like out of a fiction book or something. His daughter happens to be, he's a rabbi, but his daughter happens to be operating a sex shop on the internet with a special type of vibrator that they promote. You can't make this up. Like, the subversion can't stop. Like, can you at least have a daughter who goes on to be a normie? No, she needs to subvert Western sexuality, her too. Okay. And Candace Owens stand in front of these critiques and is like, what's the definition of anti-Semitism? And she catches him. This guy wants the definition of anti-Semitism to be fluid, to be like an amoeba, to be... And he's like, well, if you truly understand anti-Semitism, you realize that it's a changing, mutating form. And Candace is holding on to her point and is like, I reject this. And she doesn't even imposes her view, but she's resisting at first, and then she explains her point. You cannot be a definition if you don't define. You cannot say that something's definition is mutating. Like, because if it's mutating, then you need two definitions. Definition, and she goes to the root of definition. Define. Create a frame. Create the limits. Find the limits of something. What is defining? It's finding the limits of something. It's finding the point at which something becomes something else. That is what the word definition comes from. And so when this clown rabbi comes in and wants to make the definition of anti-Semitism so loose, she exposes him as, ultimately, you think like a leftist. You think exactly like the leftists want to think around racism. You think exactly like the trans want to think about gender. You want everything to be changeable because you want to be held accountable to nothing. Which Candace, by the way, I've been saying for years, the attack on the English language is ultimately an attack on the contractual state of Western civilization. Language is a contract. The first person who ever uttered I'll do that, that was a contract. That was the early form, the earliest form of a contract. I'll do that. I'll do this. Maybe they were grunting. They were signifying to each other that they can expect things from each other. And something like marriage, like pronouncing vows, is the elementary function of language. It's that I can make a couple of noise, but these noise mean something about what I will do later. They mean that you can expect me to be that way forever or for the time specified in the contract. So when they go after anti-Semitism can be anything, Candace Owens puts her finger on the exact problem here. It's that anti-Semitism is nothing else for the Jews. They know exactly what it is. It's the people who have political interests that are contrary to those of the Jews. Anti-Semitism is anyone who, just by the virtue of thinking differently, constitutes an obstacle to their political project. And their political project can be changeable. For one Jew, it might be this. For another Jew, it might be that, which is a problem. Because then the bloodthirsty Jews are showing up in Israel and, oh, they want a genocide in Gaza. And suddenly, it's anti-Semitic to criticize what the Jews are doing in Gaza. And so these amoeba definitions, as Candace lays it out, they are the problem. They are the reason why evil can seep in easily within the system of Israeli politics. Frederick von Finkel says, Jeff, how do you live with the fact that your spouse worships a Jew? Okay, so this is so out there and schizo, okay, that I need to actually explain to people what this guy means. So Frederick von Finkel is an insane schizophrenic guy who believes all sorts of very specific things, one of them being that Jesus was a Jew. And so when he asks me this, basically, he asks me, should I be anti-Semitic against my girlfriend because she's Christian and ultimately Christianity is the worshipping of a Jew? It is my view that, and I'm going to tell you my view. You won't believe it. It's so in line with Christianity, you won't believe it. It is my view, historically, that there was an event which was the events of the life of Jesus Christ. I believe that this has happened. I believe that Jesus Christ has set a moment in civilizational history, a moment giving a chance, giving a chance to a bunch of people to radicalize themselves in one direction and a bunch of people to radicalize themselves in another direction. The descendants of the Christians today have radicalized themselves in the direction of believing that Jesus Christ was a messiah or savior or whatever. In doing so, they have distinguished themselves from the other branch of people who have been actively responding to this life of Jesus Christ with hate and with denial and with rejection. To me, the Jews that were alive at the time of Jesus Christ, they are not the Jews of today. The Jews of today are Jews that have chosen, in the face of the life of Jesus Christ, to adopt the Jewish attitude. Therefore, they are different from the Jews that existed then. They might resemble them in some way, just like all humanity resemble each other in some way. We look like the Africans if you compare us to a dolphin. But that is my view. So do I take issue with the fact that my girlfriend worships Jesus Christ? No. Not at all. I'm pretty happy about it, if you want my opinion. Let's see. We're winning so hard. Go check this Candace Owen interview. Go check her whole interaction with Rabbi Shmole or Shmukle. We're winning so hard. CNN at this point is like making Vox pop in Israel and telling them, hey, this sounds like ethnic cleansing.
Of the occupied West Bank, a flag flies in the face of a Palestinian village. God is king, it says. Two young settlers guard this illegal outpost. Construction hasn't even begun, but we are not welcome.
So they're asking us to leave. They don't want to talk to us. They said they've been here for about 9 months.
Dotted across the landscape, more signs of the fight to assert Israeli control over Palestinian land. The Arabic names on signposts crudely erased. Under international law, the Beit Hagla settlement.
So they're like, well, these private guys are keeping this place, but they're not under orders of the Israeli government, so it's okay. It's just a bunch of guys who have decided to make rounds with weapons and make sure that there are no Gazans reoccupying those areas. That is a genocide in process. That is a bunch of people, and I don't even mind. Let's just be honest about it. The only thing I want is honesty in American media. I actually don't give a shit what happens in the desert of fucking shithole country, okay? I don't give a shit what's happening in Israel, honestly. but I care about the processes of truth finding in America. And that, this whole idea of, I'm going to send private agents, they're not really my army, so it's fine, but they're kind of stepping back over the lands that are cleaned by my army. This is a genocide. This is the story for the genocide of every single fucking genocide that has ever happened. The whole walk in the desert, push, bomb, accidentally kill, intentionally kill, and then repopulate with your people. And, sorry, we had to... these guys have decided to take their guns and live there. New guy says, it's not officially a genocide, so QED. Sir, I am astonished by your demonstration.
Movement is illegal, but last February, the Israeli government officially recognized it along with eight others, a move the U.S. strongly opposed. We're here because God promised us this land, Azriel Picard tells us. Now these settlers have set their sights on a new prize, one that seemed utterly impossible before October 7th. Returning to Gaza, they cheer. That is the goal of Zionists.
See, they're raising their children to scream, returning to Gaza. Yay! And they want us, the Israelis want us, to look on the other side and say, oh, well, they're raising their children to be Hamas terrorists. What are you raising your children for, Israelis? You're raising your children to be just as much terrorist as Hamas is. You're just the other side of a conflict, and you're pushing for your own genocide, convinced that the other side wants your genocide. But I love that CNN is showing this other side. Here, what's the difference between this and the Hamas camps in which they're raising children to hate Israel? It's the exact same thing. These children will grow up in a world where the highest moral value would be to push further back the Muslim population so that they can occupy the space.
Settler organization Nahala, one of more than a dozen groups now advocating for the reestablishment of Israeli settlements in Gaza. A recent promotional video even boasts that Gaza will become the next Riviera. Daniela Weiss is the godmother of the movement. She's already started recruiting from the 700,000 strong settler community of Israel.
We're just arriving now at a settlement in the occupied West Bank, and we're heading to a talk that Daniela Weiss is giving to a group of people who are potentially interested in resettling Gaza.
They're interested in resettling Gaza. And you guys says something very important. Projection is Israel's fallacy right now. Absolutely. It's everything they say about the Hamas people. I have seen no evidence. I have seen plenty of evidence that it's true, at least it's true on the Israeli side. At least it's true on the Israeli side that they are here. They are clearly raising children to be radicals. At least it's true on the Israeli side that they want a complete elimination of the Gazan population as Palestinians. And it seems to be clear that one day the goal will be to resettle this place with Jews.
We are for the land of Israel and Ben Gavir, she says. About 20 people gather in the living room of a family home. Weiss knows that for many in this community, there is deep nostalgia for Gush Katif, a block of 21 Israeli settlements that were forcibly evacuated by the IDF in 2005 when...
And see, they forcibly evacuate with the official governmental tool. And then they rely on these volunteers. You're not really under our orders, but I guess if you want to go live in that house that used to be owned by a Muslim, I guess you can. John Selmer says, it is interesting to see how they treat their atrocity edit video like pornography. It is fascinating how the rabbi is telling Candace Owen, I want you to go to a private screening. I want to invite you to a private screening of this whole, you know, this whole atrocity propaganda video that has been shown by Israel supposedly to journalists, but we are just to believe without seeing it with our eyes. it's fascinating how Candace stands and says, if you want to send this video to me, I might watch it. But given the way you treated me and the way you smeared me publicly, I am not particularly interested at committing at this point to go in a theater with you, basically, to receive an invitation to cinema with you. That was a clever comeback. I really liked it because it was like the rabbi getting denied.
Israel left the Gaza Strip. This is the vision of Gaza, she says. You see all the nucleus groups. A map has already been drawn up, with six groups laying claim to different parts of the enclave.
So they've just been handing out these little booklets that say, people of Israel, return home, and then underneath, a call to return to the settlements of...
All of these are euphemism for genocide. Return home.
Gaza.
Florida.
One of the organizers tells the group they have a representative flying to Florida to raise money. Nachala gets...
They're raising money in the U.S.
...support from a number of groups in the U.S., including AFSI, Americans for a Safe Israel.
And Christians are the target of this because Christians are so generous, but understand that if you give to this... You're giving, your money is trickling down the line of a genocide. Your money is choosing a winner in some place in the Middle East who no one gives a shit about except the people who are personally involved in conquering it.
Which co-sponsored a recent webinar on the return to Gush Katif, even as the Biden administration has cracked down on settlements in the West Bank.
There is a very strong support. From very prominent, from very, I would say, wealthy people, wealthy Jews.
In the U.S.?
In the U.S.
Can you name any names?
No, I cannot.
Oh, no, I cannot name who is funding this, basically, human recolonization of a war area that is supposedly only being taken for security. If you take a land for security... You have no interest in repopulating it with your people. If you have interest in repopulating with your people, you are engaged in an ethnic cleansing. And billionaire Jews in the U.S. are funding these efforts. From the very beginning of the history of Israel, this has always been it. It's been the English elite, Jewish elite of England, then Jewish elite of America, all plotting, all coordinating a big effort to coordinate an ethnic cleansing in the Middle East and compensate for it by enough control in the media to make it happen and make it happen in a way that people will not question it. And weirdly, as a man of America, I don't even feel involved in the first claim. I don't care all that much about who makes war in the Middle East and it's going to be a bunch of Jews against a bunch of Muslims, or it's going to be a bunch of Muslims against a bunch of other Muslims. It's like, yeah, go ahead and fight for your piece of desert. But I do care about how this has changed the truth-finding process of Western civilization and has biased it, has crooked it, and has totally wrecked our ability to know the truth from the media. This is what I care about. And the fact that you have these billionaire Jews both funding the mediatic side and the reconquest side, you know what you're dealing with here. You're dealing with a very evil entity that's willing to lie, willing to mislead, willing to misdirect for accomplishing their goal, which happens to be killing other people.
No.
Back at her home in Kedumim settlement, Weiss tells us she's already enrolled 500 families.
I even have on my cell phone names of people who say to enlist me, enroll me, I want to join. I want to join the groups that are going to settle Gaza.
I have to ask you though, because we're sitting here talking and we're listening to the call to prayer. Yeah, I'm listening to
it. I hope you are listening to it.
Which is a reminder, I think, of the people who live here, but also the people who live in Gaza. What happens to them in this vision of this new settlement with Jewish settlers even in Gaza?
Okay. I can answer your question. Okay. We have a plan. I can't wait for the answer. What is she going to say to this one?
What I think about Gaza, the Arabs of Gaza lost the right to be in Gaza on the 7th of...
They have to be elsewhere. That is always the response in genocide. They have to be elsewhere. Not my problem. They have to be somewhere safe, somewhere out there. And everyone wants everyone else to be out there. Let me tell you, as an artist, if you could give me the chance to expel the entire normie population of North America, they have to go somewhere safe. We will make accommodations. We will make cruise ships. Normies like cruise ships. We will have cruise ships, but they have to go elsewhere. They have lost their right to be around me.
Of October. Yes, I do hear the mosque. I do hear the prayer. Things were different until the 7th of October. No Arab, I'm speaking about more than 2 million Arabs. Mm-hmm. They will not stay there. We, Jews, will be in Gaza.
That sounds like ethnic cleansing.
Okay. The Arabs want to annihilate the state of Israel. So you can call them monsters. You can call them cleansing of Jews. We are not doing to them. They are doing to us. I couldn't.
And here you have it, the whole projection and version. The fact that, you know, credit to Clarissa Ward. She's been at times serving warmongering interests. In Ukraine, I found her stuff doubtable at best. Weird, fucking weird. But here she goes for it. I mean, she's serving the far left, academic, kind of, you know, people who have become so communist and far left that they actually start realizing, hey, Israel is pretty evil. There is such a thing. And I think she's serving this side here very well. And she's showing this woman looking at the sky like this. It's not us, it's them that are doing to us. And you can see she's trying to find her words to get out of this trap. That yes, you're committing ethnic cleansing. This is what you just described. You just described all of it. And that's all I care about, you know. Let's be honest about what's happening. And part of the problem is that we can't be honest because of precisely the kind of Brett Weinstein reaction, which is, I publish a science theory. Then I'm honest on certain race-related questions and Israeli-related questions. And now Brett Weinstein says, I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to engage with his theory. Because he's a white nationalist, supremacist, anti-Semite, and he has Nazis in his crowd. It sucks. And Candace Owen went after it, and we now have Leather Apron Club, a massive drop today. He drops, I noticed something interesting about Elon Musk's tweets. Wow. That is quantification of a kind that we needed. Because it's one thing to know, okay, the elite podcast industry is dominated by Jews. Everyone kind of knew it and felt it. But it was good of Letter Apron Club to describe this. But now he's going further. He's going, hey, Elon Musk, when he tweets, just tweeting out of nowhere. He doesn't respond to people randomly. He has discriminatory... He has a disproportionate impact in promoting Jewish accounts. And Leather Apron Club quantifies it to something like around 30%. So Jews are 1% of the population. If you expected them to be randomly selected by Elon Musk, Elon Musk would roughly talk to 1%. 1% of his retweets and replies would be to Jews. It's 30%. That indicates that there is a penetration of Jewish interest in representation and in the pulling out of accounts in the public conversation, even below the line of the podcast guest. Because, okay, the podcast guest, you can make all sorts of arguments. You can say, oh, maybe they're just more networked. Maybe they're just more lucky. Maybe they're just more intelligent. And there's ways to debunk all of these claims. But this is beautiful because it shows that in the very basic conversation, the public conversation is penetrated with Jewish interest. And we should talk about this. We should talk about how in 2024 this is happening and keeping us from calling a genocide a genocide. That's it. Diaz is God, says, my son is almost 2 and still no words. He plays with other kids and myself and makes good eye contact. Any advice? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. There are kids who are late, and it's totally fine. I happen to think it's the normal way of kids to develop. I happen to think that we are currently raising generations of kids to have words around 1, 1.5 year old and have sentences at 2. I happen to think that this is the highly anxious response of a kid who has to deal with a complex social world too early in his life. So let it go. Don't worry. Do start taking books and pointing to items. Kids love doing this. At 2 years old, they will love doing it. Apple, point an apple. Banana, point a banana. And eventually they will start having categories for single words. And it's not dramatic at all that at 2 they would have no words or close to no words. Start introducing this concept that pointing word is something. Eventually, they will by themselves, instead of you pointing and bringing them to the book, they will by themselves open the book and say, they'll come to you and say, apple, apple. Now, that's very good. Now you've trained both categorical classification and a desire to engage in it. And from there you can demand more details. Like, the problem is that a kid who is totally satisfied and who's living in actually a beautiful environment of love actually doesn't need sentences that much. Like, they say banana and you give them a banana and everything is fine. Now, you can eventually impose certain more detailed communication. For example, there are many words who they will start having the same word for many things. You know, if cover sounds like clover, and you've shown them a clover leaf in the book, and they also sleep in a cover, in bedsheet covers, you know, and they start saying cover, and it will be cover both when they point to the clover on the book and the cover of the bed sheets. You can ask for clarity and you can take this context of life. When Nana sounds like banana, you can say, no, what do you want? You want Nana? And, you know, kind of be stubborn about it and start doing, you want Nana? There's no Nana here. Oh, you want a banana. Oh, banana. And then they get the self-correction step of language learning. So, introduce categorical recognition. Introduce social interaction on categorical recognition. And then distinguish the fine details of language. And eventually, they will construct sentences. By the way, YouTube is good for pushing a child to construct sentences. You will hear them sometimes come up with sentences that you haven't taught them. Like on YouTube, you put these kid shows. It's like, I want this, I want that. Now, those are the first few sentences that kids will do voluntarily. Rather than say banana, I want a banana. And that starts introducing the idea of, oh, beside the word of the thing that you want, there is ways to frame it. There's situations where I want a banana, and there's situations where I don't want a banana. That's how you build from categorical recognition to full sentence formulation. 4 steps, do each of them. Does Elliot Page, formerly Ellen Page, look happy? Let's see. Some more pushing of the trend stuff. DK Shadow says, careful, some of these YouTube kid shows are subversive. Absolutely, be careful, be selective, but at the same time, don't forget that you don't have to over-shelter your kids. Over-sheltering is a danger in and of itself. Never forget this. Never forget that I'm a highly moral guy. I'm not a degenerate guy. I don't engage in weird sexual practices. And yet teenage JF, and almost children, child JF, was exposed to a world of internet and kidding with his male friends about connecting to BBSs that were specialized in degenerate, just sadomasochist porn. And so just to say, it's not because you're exposed to something that you integrate it. You can be exposed to something and have a contrarian mind that is properly pillared on moral pillars that makes you say, all right, I want to still see the world. Now, it's true that if you're with a very young child, maybe it's more dangerous because they don't have yet these capacities to process and reject.
There's a sort of culture war playing out in which trans people have been kind of put in the middle of. And I just wondered how you feel about that.
And when it comes to the devastating impact of what politicians and governments are doing and saying, it's uncomfortable is an understatement. It's actually horrific and has extremely devastating consequences for a community that already really struggles to just exist.
What the politicians are doing, the politicians are literally at the knees of the trans community. I mean, they're... The politicians are shaking in their pants. Even those who don't like the trans push and the LGBT push, I've not seen any politician strongly opposing this lifestyle. In fact, it's in many countries they can't. In the US, they can in words, but they often can't in practice. You have the whole political and elite class of the US at your feet. Kissing your feet, and oh my god, it's really hard. Yes, Anan says existence is too difficult. Yes, it's like, okay, well, if this current degree of societal submissiveness to your interest isn't satisfying you, you'll just never get there. There is no happiness for you ever. And so let's get done with this. The trans community will never be satisfied. Gender ideology, what it does to people, says Libs of TikTok.
I don't know if I'm gonna post this or not, but I just need a fucking rant. Universal labor support just fucking called me.
You're not entitled to universal labor support, whatever that is.
And the first thing they fucking did is fucking dead name me. Love that.
Yeah, that's because you registered under this name, because that's the name you're born with.
That, we're off to a really fucking good start. They ask if I'm available for a fucking shift.
Yeah, you do have to work to continue existing, or else you're a drain on other people's resources.
In fucking weeks, they have not fucking scheduled me.
Well, so you got 9 weeks. This person has 9 weeks of free pay. They do have to show up for one shift and they complain. You had 9 weeks for free. You're going to have to show at least that you're willing to show up.
First of all, mostly everyone who calls from labor support knows me as fucking Max, not fucking dead name.
This is not labor support at this point. It's like psychiatric care.
Getting off to a really fucking good start right there, aren't we? Second, pretty much everyone I talk to knows about my fucking situation. They know that I'm homeless. It's not like I have a bed I can fucking crawl up in and take a nice fucking goddamn nap. I don't have a fucking accessible shower. I don't have anywhere to keep my fucking dog.
Maybe you should have planned your shower access before you chopped whatever, before you transformed your vagina into a penis. Maybe you should have cared about basic sewer handling of the sewer system, the place to live, before you committed your resources to a sex change.
And they're trying to fucking schedule me on Sunday. No fucking notice. Nobody calls me and says, hey, yo, we want to schedule you now. No. They ask if I'm available to their fucking needs after they fucked me over for no-
Society has needs too, you know? We can't just let someone drain money from us forever. Go to work, do your shift.
9 fucking weeks! Go fuck yourself, Universal! Fuck you for dead naming me. Fuck you for not changing my fucking name on my ID. Fuck you for not understanding my situation. Fuck you for being trans.
Those are not fuck you fingers. You're just making it up at this point.
I am so fucking done with companies fucking us over. I am so sick and fucking tired of filling out
I think this shows what I've always been believing, which is that this whole trans thing is comorbid with so many other problems, a form of narcissism, of entitlement. Ultimately, you probably engage in this whole sex change path, partly because you're narcissistic who want to find a way to really hurt your parents, and you want to really like show them like there's no chance in hell I'm going to have a baby. There's no chance in hell you're going to have grandchildren. It's a whole revolt because you put them in other situations that they've been demanding this. They've been demanding treatment, equal treatment at work, and we want to be part of society and useful for society. You give them that, and they show the exact same revolt that they initially showed against gender and against nature and against their parents. So ultimately, it's an oppositional disorder of sort. DK Shadow says, yep, so much comorbidity, a cluster of cluster bees. A meta cluster. A cluster of clusters. there was a testimony of an ex-business partner of Hunter Biden spilling the tea on Hunter Biden, revealing stuff about the dirty dealings of Hunter Biden. Of course, Hunter Biden was not there. Because those are testimonies that are optional. Basically, you can just say, this is criminal matters, and therefore I don't show up. We have Lucas Gage reinstated on Twitter. Lucas Gage reinstated after 3 months suspension. Was skeptical they would keep their word on that one. Good to see, says Keith Woods. I'm happy. And there is something that's been alarming. It's the development in South Dakota. They passed anti-Semitism law, under which the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism includes the claims that Jews killed Jesus. And so using the symbols and images associated with classical anti-Semitism, for instance, claims of Jews killing Jesus, to characterize Israel or Israelis. So, you know, Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ might have become illegal in South Dakota. That is, there are certain contexts in which you couldn't show this movie and start an argument. It seems that they have made a law that is totally violative here of the First Amendment. And DK Shadow makes a joke that is so beautiful, that is so mimetic. This could be viral, DK Shadow, okay? That I want to finish the show with this joke because it's the most hilarious thing I've read today. But just before I finish, I will say that tomorrow is a special occasion where James will be joining us for his first. I mean, he's been around. He's been calling me on Ask Me Anything. But tomorrow, James takes control of the show as a co-host, and where I will be interviewing him. He has a fascinating program to share with us. Listen, it's called The Origin of Property in Land by Fustel de Coulanges. He wants to review the book. It's how collective ownership of property was rare, and this lie of collective ownership was a mistake at first, but this mistake led to many destructive movements of the past century. It is demonstrated in three historical time periods: Anglo-Saxon England, ancient Rome, and ancient Greece. Basically, this book affirms that private property is the main form of land ownership in Western civilization throughout our history. So basically, there's been subversion, lies, and misunderstandings around land ownership and the concept of property that have led civilization astray. That is the thesis that James will be presenting tomorrow. Don't miss it. It will be an in-depth show like back in the days. Now, DK Shadow, I finish with your clever commentary here. Jesus didn't kill himself. Thank you.